chatted with this next guest. We were in beautiful Las Vegas. He was nice enough to stop by and say hello, and he's nice enough to join us today. One of the best in the business, Tim Kirkjian from ESPN. Talk a little baseball. Tim, how are you?
I'm well, fellas. How you doing?
We are doing very well. I think people are getting excited about a football game around here. Can you understand something like that? Weird, right?
No, I haven't understood football since they went to the nickel package.
That's what I like to hear.
Have no idea what a bubble screen is. I grew up watching football in the 60s and the 70s when guys played like every down on offense and every down on defense. And now I have trouble keeping track. What is a factor back? Does anyone know what that is? Because I don't know anything anymore. I used to know the kicker on every team in the NFL. Now I don't even know the quarterback on all the teams. Not even close.
Well, that's all right. You make up for it in spades on baseball. Tim, let me ask you right off the top here. Padres, Dallas Keuchel. We've heard it, or at least I've read it on a bunch of tweets. You know, I don't know how true any of it is. It seems to me the longer this goes, maybe that the better the opportunity that the Padres might be able to sneak in and snag this guy. Do you think there's any possibility a big name like that could wind up in San Diego?
Note my hesitation. Yes, there's a possibility. My guess is he's going to go somewhere else, and yet I'm not sure where else he's going to go. There's so much misinformation out there,
yeah.
So much good information out there, it's really difficult to sift through. But the bottom line is this. If the Padres want to become a formidable organization, they're going to have to start adding some veteran players with some experience. Dallas Keuchel would fit perfectly at the top of their rotation. He's precisely what they need on this free agent market. So, yes, I think there's still a chance there, but he's also the best free agent pitcher out there at the moment, and all sorts of other teams are looking for another starting pitcher, and that's why I'll go for the field as opposed to the Padres here.
Tim, I have to ask you a question because I need you to kind of ease the tension that is building. I look at this free agent class, and I look at last year's free agent class, and there's just not a lot of action going on. And we've seen the prices come way down. We've seen the money come into the game, make a record since 2010. What if I had asked you to put a percentage on the likeliness of a strike here, January 10th, 2019? Could you put a percentage on it right now?
Yeah, it's pretty high, Tony, and I'm worried about this. Look, I covered the 81 strike. That's how far I go back with this stuff. And I hated every second of every labor negotiation. They are so difficult to cover and to get correctly done. And I think that's where we're headed at the moment. Now, there's plenty of time to get some good feelings going between the union and the players. And we haven't had a work stoppage in nearly 20 years, which is over 20 years, which is great, great news. But I'm worried that with this latest, what happened last year in the free agent situation, and again this year, and some other issues out there, that I'm just praying that the two sides start working together, and I mean now, to make sure there isn't a major labor issue several years from now.
Tim, when does the collective bargaining agreement end?
Well, we've got 3 more years of peace, and then things really start to get dicey. And that's what we're all worried about, is the union and the owners have been so good together and so tight in making sure we don't have another work stoppage, and yet I just don't sense that we're there at the moment. But I repeat, there is plenty of time to start to put this together, but if they're going to wait to the last minute, as so many of the really bad labor negotiations went, we're going to be in for some big trouble, and I just hope that's not the case.
All you have to do, Tim, to predict this next work stoppage is wait for the Padres to jump into first place. That's when the next work stoppage is going to happen. I feel the 94 Expos all over again, just waiting for the Padres, because obviously the next 2 or 3 years is supposed to be when they're good.
Yeah, that would be that would really be cruel if that were to happen. And yet, you poor people in San Diego, I know that's what you're thinking these days. And that Expo team in '94 was so good, and that basically ended baseball in Montreal because that team never got a chance to play in the postseason. And what if that team had played and won the World Series? I think you can make a legitimate case baseball would still be played in Montreal today.
Yeah, I wish it still was. Tim Kirkjian is with us from ESPN. I don't know if I'm not into the gambling aspect of this stuff, but I do get a little bit of interest in the over-under numbers that are put up by Las Vegas because I think it kind of gives you a little gauge of what people are thinking. And the Padres' number to me is very, very high, Tim. 77.5 wins for a team that hasn't won over 77 games in 10 years. And a team that won only 66 last year hasn't really made any wildly significant offseason moves. Why do you think the number is kind of where it is? Why would the perception be that the Padres are going to improve by that much this year?
Well, I just got back from Vegas, and believe me, nobody, but nobody knows less about gambling than I do. So I'm not the right person to ask about this, but I'm with you. I think 77 sounds a little bit high, but let's face it, the Giants aren't very good and haven't gotten better in the offseason. The Diamondbacks have gotten worse, clearly. The Rockies haven't done a whole lot to get better, and the Dodgers haven't done much to get better. So maybe you can look at it and say this is a divisional situation. It's not as good a division as it was 2 years ago or even last year. Maybe it's coming back to the Padres, and maybe the people in Vegas who beat me at the $5 blackjack table the other day, which is my speed and no higher, maybe they see that this division isn't that great, and they see all these young kids on the way for the Padres. I don't think they're ready for 2019, but we'll see.
I'm with Tim, though. I want to find that $5 table. I can't even find that one anymore.
I was about to say, those are hard to find,
Tim.
You must
have
been on the lookout for
those. You got connections.
No, I stink at Vegas. I was so bad. I played blackjack for like 4 hours, and I won like $6. It's like the biggest waste of time ever.
Tim, I gotta ask you about the top of this free agency class. Obviously, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are the two jewels out there that everybody wants. Supposedly, there's a mystery team in on both of these guys. Do you happen to know who that mystery team is?
Yeah. No, Tony, I don't. I have a bunch of teams that you could throw out there. Maybe the Braves jump in and grab somebody. Maybe the Nationals, who are very sneaky, go in and get Manny Machado. I'm not suggesting for a second that any of this is going to happen, but I'm always a little leery when I hear about the mystery team, because rarely does a mystery team come from nowhere and suddenly have $300 million to spend. But yes, I've also learned that just when you think, yeah, these are the teams involved, never be shocked when somebody else comes from someplace else. But again, when we're talking about this much money, I'm not buying wholeheartedly the whole mystery team factor.
How much money do you think is going to wind up going to Harper and to Machado in this market, based on Tony's earlier question? And how much is it going to mean toward kind of the immediate future of baseball based on how much these guys end up getting?
Well, I think they're both going to get roughly $300 million, maybe a little less, maybe more, but I wouldn't say significantly more. And again, this is all just based on things I've heard, but what you hear today changes an hour from today. That's how it works. But they're in a different category. They have tremendous resumes. They're 25 and 26 years old. They're just kids, and they have big futures ahead of them. This is not a 34-year-old free agent who wants to be paid until 38. These are 26-year-old guys who want to be paid until they're, you know, 32 or 34 or even 36. That's a much better deal when you're talking about guys with this kind of ability, this kind of resume, being this young.
Tim, how is Oakland reacting to this news about Kyler Murray? I mean, obviously they took him 9th overall. They had come to an agreement. They signed on the dotted line. But now it seems like he's having some second thoughts a little bit about the NFL. How is Oakland handling all of this?
Well, I checked on this today, and obviously they would love to have Kyler Murray play baseball. That's why they picked him with the 9th overall pick. But they also knew all along they are dealing with a 2-sport star, a great college football player, and maybe they didn't see him winning the Heisman, but they had to see how dynamic an athlete he is and how he's more advanced in football right now than he is in baseball,
yeah.
Especially given the skill requirements as opposed to the athletic requirements in each sport. It takes longer, and Tony Gwynn Jr. knows this as well as anyone.
Certainly.
It takes longer to learn how to play baseball than it does to learn how to be a great football player when your athleticism runs the show in football and your skill level runs the show in baseball. So I think they would love Kyler Murray to say, look, I'm going to play baseball only, but how can you not at least look at football when you could be starting, in theory, on opening day in the NFL next year, whereas you pick baseball, chances are you're going to open an A-ball in Stockton. I'm not sure there's a real decision to be made there when you look at it that way.
Touché. Tim, it is a great pleasure to have you on the show. Really look up to you and your work, and fun to have you with us. It was nice of you to make time for us in Las Vegas, and nice Absolutely. Of you to make time for us today. Enjoy the rest of the off season. If you need a little help on the nickel package, our producer Scraby said he'd send you a definition, and you can get ready for the playoffs this weekend. But thanks so much for
thanks,
talking
Tim.
With us. We love it.
Okay, my pleasure, fellas. See you.
Never.
Always.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwynn and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
This is going to be the best Big Five because I kicked a great field goal today. So number five, please, Will.
Everybody's going to look at the video and go, what are you talking about? You kicked a great field goal.
Oh, see, they're laughing about me outside.
Of course they are, because you think somehow you kicked a great field goal.
Did you think people were going to be coming in here high-fiving you?
I thought I was going to make it. That's
what
I thought.
You did make it, though.
It was close enough. Wait till you see.
It wasn't close. Did you
watch
it?
Wait till you see. No, I haven't.
Wait till you see.
But I hit the crossbar that was 2 yards in front of the goalpost.
You did not hit the crossbar.
It went from 10 yards to 2 yards.
No, I hit the soccer crossbar that was in front of the football
Braden
crossbar.
Braden says that the football never got above the goalpost.
It's still doinked.
Not at the right post,
all
though.
Right. Scraby, what if I put up a pole 8 yards away and you kick that? Does that mean it's a doink?
No.
God. That'd be like, that's like no. saying, I hit the ball hard. You're out
there. All right, number five. Thank you, Will. It was announced yesterday that Alabama backup quarterback Jalen Hurts is going to be a graduate transfer and looking for a new school to play football next year. And Vegas put their odds out, and these teams are the top five from first to fifth. So Houston Cougars, number one. Arizona Wildcats, number two. Maryland Terrapins, number three, which is a weird one. UCLA Bruins, number four. And the TCU Horned Frogs, number five. So, Chris, do you think Jalen Hurts will go to any of these schools?
Sure.
Great
I
answer.
I mean, how in the world does anybody know what he's thinking right now? How could you even put odds out on something like this?
I don't know. That's a great question in itself.
I mean, honestly, there's 110 schools out there.
I'm just going to start
Most
filming.
Of them would probably take Jalen Hurts if they could get him. I don't think he's going to go to – which ones did you say at
Houston,
the top?
Arizona, Houston? Maryland, UCLA, and TCU.
See, I don't know why you'd put Houston number one. They're not even a Power 5 conference team.
I think he's
I
mean, from
I
there.
Can't think he – oh, he's from Houston. But still, I would think that he'd want to at least stay in the Power 5. When you were at Alabama, it'd be hard to drop down a level. So I'd leave that out, and I'd bet on –
Just
know,
do
some
it.
Other Power 5, but I couldn't tell you what school. I have
TCU,
no idea.
So Braden can be happy out there. Tony, what do you think?
First of all, kudos to Mr. Hurts for graduating, because this his transfer is going to be allowed because he's graduated.
Right.
Cool. I think because of my man Braden Soprano, I'm going to go with TCU.
What? You're just arguing about the lame hand signals at TCU?
They do have a lame hand signal.
You know,
no
he
doubt
might
about
choose
that.
TCU, and then somebody will give him the lame hand signal, and he'll change his mind.
Yes, yes.
That's probably
what
will
happen. He'll be like, what is that?
He brought up a good point, though. They had the transfer quarterback from Texas A&M, Hill, that transferred there, too. So there are guys who look to TCU as that are quarterbacks that end up going there and having some success.
Now, Will, you were at College Game Day with Braden for a TCU game. What sign did you see about the Horned Frogs?
this was at game day, right?
It was on the set of Pond.
Yeah.
So the hand signal pretty much is just I can't even describe it.
Just
go look at Google the whack. TCU hand signal, and you're gonna be like, that is lame.
Don't Google the TCU hand signal. Google something stupid, and the TCU hand signal will come up.
Yes. That was really good. I thought he should go to UCF, by the way, Jalen Hurts, because they have a good shot. They have a good team.
I'd like to see that.
That would be a good one, actually, yeah.
Because their quarterback, he's done.
Well, we're hoping that he can come back.
I don't know. Is he a junior, sophomore?
I know he has eligibility because they were talking about it.
All right, number four. Mike McCarthy is looking for a job, and this little tidbit may turn some potential teams away. According to ESPN, since the season ended, players on the Packers, quote, talked a little bit about how they felt a complacency had set in among some players and coaches, end quote. So, Tony, if you were a team looking for a coach, would you find this concerning?
I guess a little bit. I think, anytime you are in the same place for a long period of time, especially with the game of football where you're constantly trying to motivate guys to go out and play, I think this is always a possibility where guys get a little stagnant. Everybody kind of gets a little bit complacent. Your job, of course, as the coach is to replace that complacentness with, you know, some eagerness to play. But this happens all across the NFL, so... it'd be something I'm looking at, but I'd also take into account how long he had been there, who he was coaching, and how they were responding. I think Mike McCarthy's still a good coach in the league.
Chris, what do you think? Would you be concerned if you heard that players were feeling complacent?
No, because it would just be something that I heard. I also heard that the day after the final Dolphin game this year, half the team went in and said that they better fire Adam Gase because they couldn't stand him anymore. Obviously, the Jets weren't too concerned hearing about that because they just hired him. So I think, you know, if you're going to hire somebody, get in there, do your due diligence.
Do your own homework.
And interview them. Yeah, don't go by something you hear. Having said that, I disagree with Tony. I don't think Mike McCarthy's all that great of a coach. I think he's been all right with Aaron Rodgers. I think if he had Ryan Tannehill, I don't even think we'd be considering.
Can anybody coach with Ryan Tannehill?
Well, Adam Gase obviously did good enough to get another job. But, no, I'm just saying, I think – it's hard to say how good Mike McCarthy is because he's had such a great quarterback his entire career.
Can we say the same thing about Mike Tomlin then?
No.
Oh.
Because Mike Tomlin looks like just a guy that would get in my face and make me play better. Mike McCarthy looks like somebody's grandpa.
He's a pretty big dude. I've seen him in person before, and he is a tall...
He's tall?
He's a tallish, demanding-looking dude.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin looks like he would just motivate me by walking into a room.
He does have that.
He just has
that
look.
That air about him, yeah.
So, anyway.
I was hoping you guys were going to stall a little bit. I'm looking at height of Mike McCarthy. It's not going to come up.
We don't need it.
All right. This one's going to get weird, guys.
Oh. This is your specialty right here.
We have talked a lot about all of the NFL coaching hires, and some experts are saying this is a really weak class of head coaches. And then I read this crazy little nugget that I thought wasn't so crazy, because the Niners have had two subpar seasons under Kyle Shanahan, and these experts are saying if Shanahan was fired or quit and he was on the free agency of coaches, he would be the number one draft pick of coaches, and he would actually get a raise. So, Chris, can you ever think of a situation where a coach should quit to get a bigger payday?
I was looking up Mike McCarthy's height. And they don't even have it on Google.
I know, I'm looking at it too.
All right, sorry, you're going to have to ask the question again.
The question
is, I
didn't
hear a word of it.
Would you ever, okay, I don't even know. Tony, you go first.
What was the question?
He doesn't
oh my
know
God.
It either.
Would you ever think that a coach would quit to get a higher payday somewhere else? Because Kyle Shanahan would be the number one pick of coaches on the free agent coach roster right now. And experts are saying that if he would quit the 49ers, he would be making more money for another team. Could you ever see a coach doing that?
Don't coaches already do that? I swear.
Not in the NFL.
Well, Yes, to answer your question, I could absolutely see that. You get a little a much bigger pay raise. You're not quite feeling the situation in. Oh, coaches do it all the time, and they get away free, scot-free.
Yeah.
Nobody says anything. So, yes, I could see it.
You don't want me to answer
No,
you don't want me to answer because the first thing I'm going to say is this is one of your all-time dumb questions.
I knew that was what you were going to say.
Bill Belichick was the coach of the New York Jets for about 8 minutes. Then they found out he could make gazillions more by being the coach of the New England Patriots. He left the Jets before he even walked in the door.
I get
and
that.
And took the job. Okay, well, it's if you
different.
Get that,
it's
then why are you
though.
Asking
it's
this
different.
Question?
Because Kyle different. Shanahan is involved in the 49ers franchise for the last 2 years. It's not like if Bill Belichick was there for 2 years and then left, I would get it. But
there isn't a single coach anywhere that is devoted to his team that I see.
Wow.
I really don't see it. As long as they're getting a ton of money and an offer somewhere else, they're looking to go. Most
That's real.
Of them.
There's some weird stuff going on in the studio today.
Do you want to top that dumb question with this one?
I don't think this is a dumb one.
All right.
It's a little weird, but I don't think it's dumb.
Okay.
The Clemson Tigers are riding high, and senior wideout Hunter Renfrow, yes, Hunter Renfrow, who plays for the Clemson Tigers as a wide receiver, may have taken a shot at Nick Saban. Sorry about that. There was something moving on my screen. He was being interviewed and said, quote, Coach, whoever's typing, please stop typing. Okay. Quote,
what in the world?
On our Google Doc, it moves around, so something's going on.
I just wonder what people who are listening to this segment are thinking about you right now.
He was being interviewed and said, quote, Coach Swinney has built it on fun, and obviously Coach Saban has built it on process. I'm just so proud of being at a place like Clemson where I feel like we've done it the right way, end quote. So, Tony, in 50 years, do you think the process of Nick Saban will be more successful than the fun process that Dabo Sweeney has?
Basically, who do I think will be more successful with their style in the
yes,
end?
Yes, correct. That was a better way of asking that question.
Probably Nick Saban. I mean, he's got a head start, he's kind of established himself. I think, let me change it. I'm gonna say Dabo.
Because really?
Here's why. I think eventually you run into a problem, at least Saban will, where guys start to tune you out. You know, especially even when you've had success, it's a little bit harder to when you're constantly beating on guys. And maybe he's not. When you're constantly beating on guys, it seems like that eventually falls on deaf ears. But the fun Dabo is always seems like he's in a good mood, coaching up guys. I can see that lasting longer.
Chris, what do you think?
I am a little surprised that Saban has lasted as long as he has at Alabama. I think, honestly, the only reason that has happened is because he's been so good. If you look at his career, 1 year at Toledo, 5 years at Michigan State, 5 years at LSU, coffee cup with the Dolphins, and now 10 years at Alabama, make it 11. Again, he's always gone about 4 or 5 years because I agree with Tony. I think that hardcore attitude wears thin after a while. But I guess if you win the national championship every year, you're not going anywhere.
That's
so
true.
I think if Saban ever were to have a 7-4 season,
I think he'd be going somewhere else.
Like if they played a real schedule and actually had some tough games to deal with. I don't know that he'd be going somewhere else, but I think it would be you'd see people turn on him a little quicker than they would tend to turn on a guy like Dabo Sweeney.
The weather in Kansas City for Saturday's divisional game between the Chiefs and the Colts is looking cold and snowy. It's predicted that 3 to 5 inches of snow is supposed to fall Friday night and Saturday morning, which may cause a lot of problems for Chiefs fans getting to the game. And we know that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense is built on speed and airing the ball out. So, Chris, could being at home this week outside and in the weather, not being in the dome of Indianapolis, actually doom the Chiefs this weekend?
There's a lot of things that can doom the Chiefs this weekend. I think I've already talked about
Andy
a lot
Reid's
of them.
One of them.
Yeah, Andy Reid's one of them. The young quarterback is another. The weather is a third. Tony and I have talked about it since about October, that as good as the Chiefs are, they may run into a situation where they've got to rely on something other than a wide-open, circus-like passing game to win in the playoffs because weather is a factor. I think you bring up an interesting point, Scraby, for a change here.
thought this one was going to be bad too.
The Chiefs would be, if the Chiefs had a coin flip and they could choose where the game would be played, I bet you they would choose Indianapolis because that's where they'd be comfortable. I mean, if you're going to bet one of these number one seeds to get to the Super Bowl, the reason you're picking the Saints is because they're cozy indoors at home where their conditions are not going to affect their game. Conditions are going to affect the Chiefs. They have to.
Tony, what do you think?
Give me the question again.
Do you the theme could being this at home this week outside in the weather not being in the dome? Oh gosh, see what you did to me.
I just wanted you to read it again.
Could being at home this week outside in the weather and not being in the dome of Indianapolis doom the Chiefs this weekend?
Yes and no. I mean, it could be both. I think it could equally be as of an issue for the Colts who play indoor. They're the ones playing outside. Their last game was also indoor in Houston. So this is probably 50-50, because Mahomes is a rookie quarterback, too. I mean, I don't necessarily think the weather is going to be an issue for him. I think, you know, being his first playoff game is going to be a bigger issue for the Colts. On the other hand, playing outside could be their issue, biggest issue.
That's a good point, though, Tony, that the Colts play all their games indoors, so they have to deal with this just as much as the Chiefs do.
The Colts are built for the snow for some reason. Andrew Luck just seems like a guy who likes to get out in the snow.
Andrew Luck went to Stanford and lived in California and been playing indoors his whole career, that guy?
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's smart.
Just end this. Just end it.
That's all for the Big Five.
Just set yourself up for some 97.3.
Just end it.
Julian Edelman posted a hype video to social media the other day. It was all about Beat LA, and we all know the long-standing Boston-LA sports rivalry that spans across multiple sports, but I'm watching this video, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess the Chargers are L.A. now. It's like it never even occurred to me.
It didn't occur to either of us either until somebody brought it up. Yeah, it was kind of interesting.
Ben, it's more like Boston Orange County than anything.
Yeah, right. You're right.
Ben, I want to ask about Rob Gronkowski. He's had a rough year, to say the least, this year. Is there been any talks of him retiring after the end of this season?
Not from him, but that's definitely, you know, the buzz and what all the fans are talking about. And, you know, this is already a guy who immediately after the Super Bowl last year said, yeah, I've been thinking about retirement. Yeah. And I think some of it was, you know, at the end of a long season, players are always just ready to get the heck out of there and I'm done with this. And then they get a few months off and they get refreshed and they're ready to go. And I think it was a little bit of a contract ploy, too, by Gronk. I think he was setting the stage for a renegotiation. At the same time, he looks a shell of himself this year physically. He's been on the injury report for about half the season with back and ankle injuries. He actually wasn't on the report this week, which maybe says that he's 100%, but I think at this time of the season, no one's really 100%. And anytime you see back injury with Gronk, that's a huge red flag. This is a guy who's you know, had the disc issue in his back. He's had three surgeries over his career to fix it. And you got to think that a fourth is coming at some point, whether it's this offseason or when he's done with his career. But that he's always had chronic back problems, and he just doesn't get separation this year. He's still a good route runner. He's still pretty solid in the run game. They've been using him as a decoy in the passing game, keeping him in to block a lot this season. And he still makes contested catches in traffic, but he's had the lowest yards after catch numbers of his career. He's not trucking guys and bowling them over and being the Gronk that we've seen over the last 8 years. So he's still a good player for them, and he's still a positive when he's on the field, but he's not Gronk, and he's not the same guy. And I don't think anyone would be surprised if he retired after this season.
Father Time still undefeated, as they say. Ben Volen is with us from the Boston Globe. Ben, we buried the Patriots out here in the West Coast. I'm sure they buried them there in New England 5 times, I think it was, this year. Every time they lost a game, that was the end of the Patriots' run. It was all over for Brady. It was all over for Belichick. All that stuff. And, of course, all that noise just goes away because here they are getting ready to host another playoff game after, I think it's their 9th straight year with a bye in the first round, which is just an amazing achievement. Where do you rate this version of the Patriot team with, you know, say the last 8 or 9?
Certainly a step below where they've been the last, 4 years, making the Super Bowl 3 out of 4 times, winning it twice. this team is not as good as that team. I compare it to the 2013 Patriots, who still made it to the AFC Championship game, but they had to go on the road to Denver, and that was Peyton Manning's first year there, or maybe his second year, but the Patriots got blown out on the road. They just didn't have enough firepower, and it seems similar this year. They're a good team. They did get to 11-5. Here they are hosting a game in the divisional round. They could easily lose this game, and then all the talk about the Patriots dynasty comes back, you know, Sunday night, Monday morning, and, you know, is Brady and Belichick finished and all that stuff. They just, you know, I think they overestimated how much Brady, Edelman, and Gronk have left in the tank because they kind of built the offense around those three players this year. They let Amendola walk. They traded away Brandon Cooks. They let Deion Lewis walk, and they went bargain hunting to replace them. Eric Decker, Kenny Britt, you know, guys, Jordan Matthews, guys who'd never didn't make the team out of training camp. And so they just haven't had great weapons around Tom Brady this year. And Brady still looked pretty good. He definitely isn't falling off a cliff. He's definitely playing well considering his age. But you can tell he just is not comfortable with the pieces they put around him this year. And I think they overestimated, especially Gronk. They, you know, I don't know if they anticipated him having back issues again this year. But they just haven't looked the same. And this does not, to me, look like a Super Bowl-worthy team. Maybe the cards fall, you know, in place for them. Maybe the Colts beat the Chiefs this weekend, the Patriots knock off the Chargers, and all of a sudden the Patriots are hosting the AFC Championship game. But this is not one of their better units. And that's, you know, the standards around here are pretty high. They won two Super Bowls and went to three in the last 4 years. So that's not a huge knock saying they're not as good as they used to be.
Ben, you know, sometimes Bill Belichick will, you know, do his conferences, and at least from my standpoint, I always get a read of how he feels about his opponent he's going up against by the type of praise that he gives them. What has he been saying about the Chargers leading up to this game on Sunday?
A lot of praise. You know, Philip Rivers is big, tough, accurate, savvy. You know, every adjective in the book he uses for Philip Rivers. Their offensive linemen are big and physical and dominant. And their wide receivers, they're big, they're fast, they can do it all. I mean, he kind of does that. He pumps the tires. When they played the Jets 2 weeks ago, you know, I thought they were playing, I thought Joe Namath was back at quarterback for the Jets. And so he definitely accentuates the positive in the media and certainly with his players, too. He wants them to have, you know, the opponent's full attention and to take the game seriously. But, you know, there are reasons to praise the Chargers. I don't think it's a lot of hot air. I think if you look at all the teams in the AFC, they're probably the most balanced and I think have the fewest flaws of any of the teams. They're just solid across the board on both sides of the football. So this is going to be a great test for the Patriots. It's been a while since they've had a really tough game here in the second round of the playoffs. Usually it's kind of a cakewalk and almost a second bye, and it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to go to the AFC Championship game. But I could definitely see the Chargers coming into town and knocking these guys off. The Chargers are a very good team. You know, the things going in the Patriots' favor are the intangibles, the Chargers with the travel and the time change and playing at home at Foxborough, obviously. But on paper, if this were on a neutral field, I think the Chargers pretty much check all the boxes.
Yeah, they did also in 2006 when they played the game here in San Diego, and there isn't a single Charger fan, even people from San Diego. You'd be surprised, I think, Ben, at how many people in San Diego are really excited about this game, even though the team has left. They don't want to admit it, but I think there's still a lot of Charger love here in San Diego and a lot of dislike for the Patriots because of, you know, they came in here, beat the Chargers, stomped on the logo after the game. And
lights out dance on the logo.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, the next year beat them in the AFC Championship game. So there's definitely a lot of people looking forward to this game. Tell me about the Patriot running game. I think that might be something we haven't looked at all. And Sony Michel had some decent games. The other running back, James White, is always a big-time postseason guy. Chargers didn't use any linebackers last week. I don't know what they're going to do this week to try and cover James White, but I would think that's an area the Patriots might look to exploit.
I would agree. I think the Patriots running backs are probably the X factor this week. I don't love the Patriots matchups on the outside with their wide receivers against the Chargers DBs. Edelman I like as a matchup, but really he's the only one. And I think the Patriots are going to have to control the ball, grind the clock, pick up, you know, a lot of third downs. And if the Chargers, especially if they go with a light defense again, I don't know if they'll do the 7 defensive backs, but they could definitely do 6. I think you'll see a lot of the Patriots blocking tight end Dwayne Allen, a lot of their fullback James Devlin, a lot of power football with Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead. Michel's been good this year. He's had 3 or 4 100-yard games. He doesn't exactly create his own yardage. When it's there, he hits the hole. He does a pretty good job. He's been pretty atrocious with short yardage running, and I'm concerned about the Patriots being able to finish in the red zone and on the goal line on Sunday. That's been a big problem for them. But I think you'll see a lot of power football and a lot of play-action passes to keep the pass rush off of Brady's back. And then, yeah, James White, Rex Burkhead, when these two teams played last year, those two running backs were the Patriots' top receivers in catches and yards. So I would expect a similar performance. The other X factor is probably Cordarrelle Patterson, who's kind of a hybrid, not quite a wide receiver, a little too big to be a running back, but they do a lot of jet sweeps with him. They'll hand the ball off to him sometimes out of the backfield. Quick screens, quick hitches, you know, designed plays to get him the ball and let him use his phenomenal skill. So I think it's really going to be the Patriots' backfield more than Gronk and Edelman that's going to be carrying the day for them.
Ben Volen joins us here on Gwen and Chris from the Boston Globe. Ben, big picture concerning Bill Belichick. How much longer does he want to do this? Going into this season, the most there was a lot of news focused around the Patriots and them coming apart at the seam because of the relationship between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. It seems to be overblown. I mean, they didn't have the season that they normally do, but they seem to thrive as they normally do. How long do you see Bill Belichick doing this for?
I don't see him slowing down anytime soon. He's, you know, in his mid-60s, I think 65 or 66 right now. He once said he doesn't want to be, you know, coaching into his 70s, but it's a different NFL now.
Yeah.
And first of all, he's making a ton of money. We don't really know how much he's making, but it's probably over $10 million a year.
He doesn't share that information with you guys? Can't believe it.
Shockingly, he's kept that one private.
Yeah.
But, you know, why would you walk away from that? And, you know, it's not like the NFL is a grind like it used to be. I mean, he still goes to Nantucket on the weekends all the time and, you know, is palling around with his girlfriend and, you know, Instagramming and, you know, going to charity events and stuff. And I think he also wants to outlast Tom Brady. I think he wants to draft another quarterback or find another quarterback and, you know, try to win after Tom Brady. And Brady keeps saying he wants to play for 5 more years. He's only under contract through next year, so that'll be interesting to see if the Patriots actually give him a contract extension or if there's maybe a squabble coming down the line between the Patriots and Brady. But I don't see Belichick stepping away anytime soon. Like Josh McDaniels, everyone thought he would be the heir apparent, and maybe it turns out to be the case, but I don't think that was the arrangement. And I don't think that Bill is going to be stepping away anytime soon just because, you know, the program kind of runs itself at this point, and the NFL isn't the grind that it used to be, and he's making great money. So why would you walk away from that?
Good point.
Yeah. I just, the only thing I wish is that I could be coached by Bill Belichick, just in even in how to do a sports talk show. I bet you he'd have some pretty good information and some great insight. Ben, great insight from you on the Patriots. Really enjoyed the conversation. Enjoy the game this weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. So like, real quick, how does this go? Like, let's say the Chargers win the Super Bowl. Does San Diego throw a parade for them? Like, how
we don't know.
We don't know. I promise you, if San Diego throws a parade, I don't think they're showing up. I really don't.
That's a great call.
Who celebrates? Who gets to celebrate?
You know what? Philip Rivers might come down and celebrate. Everyone loves him here. Antonio Gates. If the ownership comes anywhere near San Diego, there would be tear gas and riot squads. But other than those two things, I think all of us are kind of just like you, Ben. We don't really know how the reaction is going to be. It's been mixed on the phones, but there are more Charger fans, I think, here than will admit to being Charger fans.
They're closet.
Well, I think it'd be funny if they held a parade in Orange County and like 20 people showed up to it. You know?
That's the conundrum there, because they throw it in L.A., nobody might show up.
Yeah, because in L.A., they don't even know they're there. So it's crazy. Ben, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot, guys.